Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk
good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. We're here with both Kirk and JB. I've been labeled by the comment that was on the homepage of Yada Yada Radio, another Judaizer. Oh my.
Really?
You know, here I'm in the third volume.
What is a Judaizer?
Yeah, I'm halfway done with the third volume of Questing Paul. And the only thing that Christian apologists can say to exonerate Paul for contradicting God ad infinitum is that he was combating Judaizers. Of course, there has never been a Judaizer in the history of the world. Jews do not try to convert anyone to their religion. Moreover, there is nothing about Judaism that Paul was fighting. He actually liked Judaism. So that clearly wasn't the problem. And, of course, I would willingly say that if we are going to have a designation of a Judaizer, and if we're going to be accused of it, then that's fine because, well, that would make Yahweh a Judaizer too, because our entire approach and our entire criticism of Paul and Christianity is to respect Yahweh, respect his testimony in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And since their whole argument is against the Torah, it's the Judaizers, of course, that are promoting the Torah. To be a Judaizer, you would have to be someone who agrees with Yahweh. What a terrible thing.
Well, what a horrible label. How dare you accuse me of agreeing with God?
How dare you accuse me of agreeing with God? Yeah, if I have to wear a label, I'm going to wear that one. You know, there was an announcement earlier this week that the U.S. economy contracted at the greatest level since the early 1940s, and that consumer spending was at the lowest level since 1938. A lot of people don't recognize that there's this tendency to blame Hoover for the Great Depression. But the Great Depression became vastly greater under FDR. FDR so mismanaged the economy that the things he did, which is what the Democrats are now ready to do, actually made the economy much worse. They increased taxes on the most productive Americans, so that at that point there was nothing other than government that was willing to spend, and government didn't have any money because no one was making any money, so there was almost nothing to tax. So all the government could do was to create the illusion of money so that it could spend money to prop up the economy, which rather than resolving the depression, exacerbated. So the Depression was actually worse in the 1930s than it was at the end of the 1920s, which is why they're saying that our economy contracted and consumer spending was the worst since the pre-war years, 1938 through 1942. But hey, don't worry, because the solution is that the $4 trillion that Trump put forward as a stimulus, and the billion that, or the trillion, billion, trillion, what does it matter? The trillion that he did as he was leaving office, and the $2 trillion that is being proposed now. You know, what's the big deal in going from being in debt $25 trillion to being in debt $35 trillion over a two-year period? Right? It's just numbers on a chalkboard. It doesn't really amount to anything. And that's the solution. They just spend more money, create the illusion of money, inflate the monetary supply, and everything will be just fine. You don't need anybody to actually work for anything, right?
No, we just give them money.
Yeah, just give them money. That is, by the way, the thing that I have said for so long, the way that the time of Jacob's troubles, the complete economic collapse around the world, the way that is going to be handled is the way that I predicted now about 20 years ago. People are going to do, those in power, is they're going to forgive all debts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just your home mortgage will be forgiven. Your credit card loans will be forgiven. Your student loans will be forgiven. And all you have to do is agree to the new monetary system and swear an oath of allegiance to whatever they're proposing. And all of your debts will be forgiven. You'll really feel good about it. And they might as well do it, because the money that you owe is worthless anyway. But that will be the answer. And, of course, if you actually had savings, they'll simply confiscate those. And from that point on, everyone is wholly dependent on government. Government is wholly inept, wholly unreliable. That's why Yahweh speaks against politics and against government. And down into the burrow of the snake, we all plunge. And that's really where we find ourselves. It's interesting, of course, that in your People's Republic of California, Kirk,
mm-hmm.
that
yes, sir.
Even though the COVID contagious rate continues to soar, right after the elections, the Governor Galvin, he just said, oh, well, let's let people out. Might as well let them run free now. We won the election. What does it matter?
It's the only thing.
And all
like
of a sudden, the schools were open. Everybody was going back to work. And I didn't see how anything changed.
No, I'm living it. Yeah, I don't either. I talk to people. They don't either. They just go, what happened? All of a sudden, it's okay to come out of your hole.
Well, yeah. Well, the reason, of course, was they had to have all these absentee ballots. Because how do you defraud the electoral process unless you have no accounting on mail-in ballots, which is what they needed to do to make certain they would prevail. Of course, they were running against a genuine nincompoop. I mean, the candidate they were running against was awesomely
hopeless.
So mm-hmm. you ought not have had to cheat to prevail. But nonetheless, it's where we find ourselves. No, no, Satan, when Satan waltzed into the garden, and he may have waltzed in, I don't see him slithering. It just would be no reason for him to.
He has to be pretty.
Pretty, yeah, he's a pretty boy. When he was allowed into the garden, you would have thought that as relatively brilliant that he would have been compared to Chawa, that he would not have had to come up with such a dunderhead ploy that he could have done, I mean, should have done better than what he did. I mean, maybe he figured it's not going to take much to fool them, and he just didn't come out with his A game. But it sort of reminds me, as we go back through what Hasatan, the serpent, had to say to Jawa, and how he corrupted Yahweh's testimony, and you know, it's kind of like, but I, Satan, say. It's very much like the tactic that he used in inspiring Paul. And it's just so amazing that, like, this person that accused me of being a Judaizer on our homepage said, you know what, the Lord chose Paul. Yeah, well, the Lord really did choose Paul.
Yes, true.
The Lord's not God. I'm about halfway through chapter 5 of Galatians in my review of Questioning Paul, volume 3 now. And I'm just flabbergasted as to, first, the hatred Paul had for God in God's testimony. He just despises him. He's so denigrates the word of God. I mean, he just says, you know, God's an idiot. He can't save you. He's mean. If you try to do anything he says, he's going to find a way to enslave you. He's just mean. And his logic is so flawed. And he's sitting here using the story of the development of the covenant and the salvation, really, of Abraham to prove that the Torah can't save. Say what? Then he wants to say that he was chosen by Iesu Christu, and then he says that Iesu Christu, the reason he died was to save you from the Torah. It was God's sins that he was saving you from, not our own.
How can you wrap your head around that?
How can, you know, almost 3 billion people believe such utter nonsense? It's not that it's well written, because it's horribly written. It's not because it's inspiring, because it's utter rubbish. And I mean, it gets right down to that proposition that I keep on sharing, which is, if you're going to be a Christian, what you have to believe is that recognized that his plan was horrible. That rather than saving people, it was actually counterproductive and was enslaving. And so God just gave up and said, I can't fix this. My plan was horrible. I'm horrible. What I need to do is I need to find somebody smarter than me that can save mankind. So he went to this man who says that he's a sexual pervert, this man who admits that he was vicious and murderous, and the man whose writing quality is about at the level of your average third grader, who is completely irrational, who is clearly a schizophrenic and psychotic, a narcissist. And he said, hey, you're my guy. I'm going to authorize you to contradict everything I said and come up with a new plan. And rather than, you know, coming up with all this detail as to how you're going to form a relationship and then resolve the issues to reconcile man back into the covenant, what I want you to do is, well, it's up to you, because I'm obviously on nincompoop. What I want you to do is come up with a plan and don't bother to even explain it. Just call it faith. And then have a tizzy fit about me seeking obedience to a law, which, by the way, isn't true, and then telling people they need to obey you. It's preposterous. And that's what you've got to believe. And Christian apologists, eat it up.
Mm-hmm. Let me read. Can I read one little verse of your translation or something?
Yeah.
By comparison, I am God Almighty. This is Barishi 17.
Mm-hmm.
Choose of your own volition and of your own initiative to walk by yourself, of your own free will, towards my presence.
Mm-hmm.
and thereby enjoy becoming genuinely perfect, eternally without defect, continually and entirely right, completely innocent, totally fulfilled, lacking nothing throughout the whole of time. Now, why would you want Paul to keep you from him?
Why would you?
You got a better deal than that?
Paul evidently thinks so.
I got to walk to him of my own free will. That's it.
And so do 2.5 billion Christians.
Yeah.
It's so sad. But anyway, as we approach this, and Hasatan speaking on his own recognizance here, it is it's just nothing but the same kind of drivel that we read in Paul's letter. Now, you imagine you're Chawa here. You've been brought into this perfect garden. I mean, there are trees everywhere, and the fruit is delicious. You've got God as your playmate. You can go out any day and go explore anything with the author of DNA, who enables you to do something that would be so much fun: talk and interact with animals. Oh gosh, talk about beautiful! And this garden is just perfect. Life is a perfect, 75 degrees every day. And there you are, and you got this man that absolutely adores you. And there's nothing to do all day but enjoy yourself. So there you are, and this somebody you don't know waltzes into the garden and says, "So what? So what if it's true that God said you should not make a habit of eating from any tree in the garden? What are you going to do?" And you're going to say, "Hey, pal, he's God." "Oh, what do you mean, so what?" "He made me. I talk to him every day. And you want to tell me, so what? If God said... And oh, by the way, if you're going to pretend to quote him, why can't you quote him accurately? He didn't say you should not make a habit of eating from any tree in the garden. In fact, he said the opposite. You should make a habit of eating from any tree in the garden. You slip the knot in and there's no knot. He didn't even say, and this is funny because people talk about the forbidden fruit. There's nothing forbidden. God even said to Adam, you can eat from every tree in the garden. They're all there. They're all good for you. They're all enjoyable. They're all delightful. Eat from any one of them you want. I just want you to know that one tree over there, the tree of the knowledge of good and bad, if you eat consistently from that tree, you're going to embody what it means to die. It's not forbidden. God said, "No, you can't do that." He says, you can eat from any tree, including that one. Just understand that there's a consequence that goes along with that. And the reason they're going to know what it's like to die is because at this point, all they knew was good and wonderful. And now they're going to know, well, what's not so good and wonderful? That would be death. So here's Satan. He misquoted God. He actually said the opposite of what God said. That's like Paul saying, if you're circumcised, you can't be saved. Say what?
About him.
Well, I find it interesting that most English Bibles, translations, oh, by the way, I should probably stop the sarcasm. Covenant member, good friend, posts these programs on YouTube, and he had a letter that wrote. Somebody wrote him, said, I've got three of the books, and I listened to the show, and I don't know what to do anymore because the author of these books is not loving. He's out mocking people.
these liars.
Yeah, because I'm mocking them, these liars and those that would speak against God.
Well, they never spoke against God.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I, this is what I wrote it back, and this woman is listening, or I think it's a woman. Maybe it's not. If you are judging whether something is from God, whether it is true or not, based upon feelings, you're looking at everything wrong. There's nothing wrong with a feeling, but your feelings have to follow your knowledge. So if you were to say, hey, that guy, I don't know, because when he speaks extemporaneously on this program, his words are inconsistent with what he writes, therefore I'm concerned. Well, that would be a genuine concern. I'm dismayed that his words extemporaneously presented are counter to the to what he writes that God says. Well, that would be a real concern. But to say that I feel that he's not loving enough, well, that's looking at everything upside down. Yeah. You ought never make a judgment based upon your feelings. Plus the fact God is not all loving. He's far more hating than he is loving. Read the Torah and prophets. Far more hating than he is loving. Because there's far more to hate than there is to love. And you cannot love without hating. And one of the most effective ways we can be godly is to know what to hate and how to hate. Yeah. I mean, we need to know that there are things worthy of hating. We also need to know how to go about doing it. It's, you don't do it like those idiots did that stormed the Capitol building, swinging baseball bats and breaking through windows and stealing things. That's a really dumb way to express your hate. Or Black Lives Matter, and you burn buildings down and you loot them. That is not the appropriate approach. You know, you ought to take a much more cerebral approach, which is to say, for example, there is a religion that is responsible for over 90% of terrorist acts around the world. It is Islam. And Islam is responsible for those things because Muhammad was a terrorist, and he said that all good Muslims are a terrorist. And then he even said that if you're a peaceful Muslim, good terrorist Muslims must kill you. Now, to expose that religion is a loving thing to do. Even to hate the religion that inspires such terrible things is exceedingly compassionate. But let's use our words. So anyway, I should be less biting, I guess, in my commentary. Would you please keep me in check, JB and Kirk? I'd appreciate that. Okay. I find it interesting, as I said, that English Bibles render Bereshit Genesis 3:1 as a question. Did God say? But there's no interrogatory in the Masoretic text. And so you can't have a question without an interrogatory in Hebrew. And the difference is that as a statement, Satan's line suggests that the adversary is not the least bit interested in soliciting mankind's opinions. No, he's much better informed and he's much smarter than we are. He's not interested in small talk. He's not interested in companionship. He didn't want to know how Chawa felt. No, Satan simply is inferring that God's instructions do not matter. He's making a statement, a declaration. He's not curious as to what someone else thinks. He is saying what Catholicism and Judaism have now inferred, that so what if God said? do whatever we want.
True.
Now, in debate parlance, Satan has set up a straw man. Straw man is maybe I shouldn't do this either. I'm being pedantic, I guess, if I'm doing this. But there's just not a lot of people that are as old as I am. So I'm not going to speak for you, Kirk, and I definitely can't speak for you, JP. But I am so old that when I went to high school and to junior high school, not only did I take classes on rhetoric and on debate, I actually competed in debate. Can you imagine a school program that not only teaches you how to debate and teaches you all of the flaws, the logical flaws that you would hold your opponent accountable to, and that's how you would win the debate, and actually having that being part of a school curriculum where there's a right and a wrong?
I've still been there when I was in school because I loved debate.
Oh,
I loved rhetoric courses.
Yeah, and I used to compete in statewide tournaments in debate, and
yeah.
I love logic, love debate. Well, a straw man is one of the logical fallacies. It's one of the most common, the most common logical fallacy today by far and away is ad hominem. And ad hominem is like the fellow that labeled me a Judaizer. That's just an ad hominem argument. He can't actually debate and prevail.
Can't address any of the
based
points.
Upon evidence and reason and to criticize anything I've said. Effectively, so all they can do is an ad hominem attack, which means of the man, and to attack the messenger as opposed to the message. That's the most prevalent fallacy today. Paul's most common fallacy is non sequitur. He makes a statement that he thinks that he will, and then he says, based upon this, then this, and there is no correlation between the two. It's like saying that red wagons have square wheels, therefore all green wagons must have round wheels. No. Well, this particular argument is a straw man. A straw man is that you would use it in debate if you have no way to win the debate based upon evidence and reason. You would create a straw man. And the straw man says that I'm going to create an argument against something that I can prevail. So if you can't effectively criticize, for example, the Word of God, what you do is you misrepresent the Word of God and say, ha-ha, I can attack that. It's kind of like the atheist will attack the creation account and say, well, see, God said that the sun was created before there were plants. The sun was created after there were plants.
Plants.
So the third day, the fourth day, the sun was created. And you'd say, no, that's a straw man. That's not what God said at all. He said the sun became visible on the fourth day.
Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. not that it was created on the fourth day. So it's a straw man. So Paul is saying, Satan is saying, so what if God said that you can't eat from any tree? That's not what he said. So if you start off with a faulty premise, that faulty premise was something that then Satan could attack as a straw man. It was something that was easy for him to disprove. It's just that by disproving it, he did not in any way disprove the Word of God. All they proved was that he was duplicitous. And it proves that he's admitting that he cannot prevail on the merits of his case using evidence and reason. So he has misrepresented the words of God and therefore presented a foe that he can defeat. While crafty and cunning, shrewd and tricky, the tactic is pragmatic because most people only know enough to be dangerous. And they're just incapable of disciplined reasoning. That's a preponderance of people today and has been the case, I guess, for most of human history. every time I engage a religious individual in debate, for example, this is their go-to ploy. And it's effective because there are too few informed, logical people around to properly identify and judge the chicanery. So lastly, there is something notable here that is also typical of pervasive, I should say, among rabbinical types. Do you know when Satan went into the garden and foisted this ploy, he didn't use Yahweh's name. He never used Yahweh's name. Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. So while Yahweh's name has been prevalent throughout Bereshit, Satan does not use it. So if you want to be like Satan, do as
don't
the rabbis have done. Do as Christians have done. Avoid using Yahweh's name. Now, in her reply, Chawa started off quite well. And up to a point, she relied on the word to counter Satan. But then, as Catholics and Muslims do today, she added her own embellishments and lost her way. Her initial differences include the mention of peri, which means fruit, which was implied but not stated by Yahweh. By the way, there's no indication whatsoever that it was an apple. Nothing. It's strictly myth. And the nature of that particular fruit is also totally irrelevant. She left out kol, which is every, and then spoke of an et tree singular, which was acceptable when, of course, God said every one of these trees. She located the tree of knowledge without actually naming it. Then, following Satan's example, she referenced referred to Yahweh by title alone rather than by name. And then she butchered by adding something that God had not said. So here's her reply. So the woman. It's interesting, too, that God doesn't name her at this point. She's just the woman. Wa-isha, female individual and wife, said Amar to this Waha-nakash, tempting and toxic creature, this sorcerous snake and venomous viper. From the fruit of the tree of the garden, we can eat. From the fruit of the tree of the garden, we can eat. So Yahweh didn't actually mention fruit, but she's going to throw it in. That's probably a reasonable assumption. Of the tree.
Yeah, she'd have seen the tree. She'd know whether it was a fruit or a nut.
Yeah, that's true. But she only has one tree of the garden we can eat. Now, she did write a call in the call perfect, imperfect, which means we can continuously eat.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. But from the fruit, Ben Perry, of the tree which is at the center of the garden, why not name it? If you name it, you'll understand what God is talking about. God said, not Yahweh, said, you should not actually make a habit of eating from it. Lo akal men hu. You should not continually consume from it, nor consistently be nourished by it. So she did get the conjugation correct. It is called imperfect. In addition, you guys should not make contact with it. Lo naga. You should not actually touch it, continually strike it or be abused by it or damage it in any way. Lo naga. Lest you will have chosen to die. Move. You'll be killed in time. This was the imperfect paragogic nun. So, before we get serious, I think I've told this story before, but once upon a time, when I was exceedingly poor, I bought on a street corner at a gas station for my fraternity room a naga hide couch. Now, most people are probably not even old enough to know there was a thing called a naga hide couch. But nonetheless, I bought it. I bought it for $50. So this was a $50 sofa. And now, if you can imagine a $50 sofa, how tacky it would have to be. It was tacky. But it was pretend leather, which I told my friends they should show some respect to my Naga High couch, because the Nagas, from which the leather came, were both rare and prized for their slippery skins. So turns out, long before Fosteen this ruse regarding the polyvinyl chloride plastic coating, Chawa spoke of the critters as if they roamed the garden. In an amplified definition, Lo Naga humorously speaks of not touching any part of the body, striking it or driving it away or abusing these precious Nagas. I rather doubt there's any Naga hide sofas in heaven, but to this day, I can vision in my mind's eye on my Naga hide couch. If only I could buy a $50 sofa today.
Like the little note.
I'm sure you're all jealous. Now, Chawa did speak of only one acceptable tree, not naming the tree tree. She never did name the tree of the knowledge of good and bad. And that suggests that she never really understood its purpose. Also, while I appreciate the nod to the elusive Nagas, Yawa said nothing of touching. Adding our own embellishments to his testimony is expressly contrary to God's instructions. You know, the paragogic nun suffix on muth die as a variation of the cohortative is an expression of first person volition. While it may be true, God did not say it. God did not say you will have chosen to die. But anyway, that's what she projected. Now, the reason God did not say, do not Naga, the tree of the knowledge of good and bad, is because if we're going to appreciate the difference between that which is productive and that which is counterproductive, we really have to examine it closely. Good and bad, right and wrong, aren't determined based on a cursory touch. So after thoughtful consideration, we can choose what we wish to consume, fully appraised of the consequence. A great example for me would be Prophet of Doom. I exposed and then condemned Islam, proving that their religion was a complete sham based upon completely digesting and then regurgitating the five oldest scriptural sources. Now, while the information contained in those books was repulsive and deadly, I had to thumb through the rubbish. I had to endure the stench to do the job. And so the same thing would have been true in the garden. You were not going to gain anything by touching something. This is not a game of touchy-feely. You do really have to be observant and pay attention and engage far more of oneself than the fingertips. Now, there are a number of reasons behind Chawa's mischaracterizations. And I maybe have no business, maybe was inappropriate, and maybe I'm getting myself in the doghouse with covenant members and maybe with non-covenant members for saying some of this, but I just can't let it go. I always want to know, why? You know, why did Chawa mischaracterize Yahweh's testimony? Well, one reason may have been that Adam may have done a really crappy job of communicating Yahweh's instructions to her. He may have been so goo-goo, gaga over pretty that he just didn't do it. And shame on him if he didn't, because he shortchanged her experience and his. You know, perhaps the job is that we should be more diligent. Now, you know, part of the quote-unquote punishment of Adam was that he was going to be required to do a really good job of explaining the truth and providing the truth. So this could be it. He maybe it falls.
I lean towards that.
Yeah, I do too. I think he said,
"Hey, honey, don't even touch it. Just leave it alone. It's bad."
Yeah, he may have said that. Just don't touch it. Just leave it alone. Let's go on, do other stuff. So another possibility is Chawa may have been a bit miffed. Could be miffed at Adam. Could have been miffed at Yahweh. Well, she was Adam's equal, equally valued, highly appreciated, and living in paradise, she was an afterthought and gift to Adam. She could have resented one or the other. I mean, it's, this puts me in hot water, but think it through. She was an afterthought, clearly. In fact, she was plan C as part of the afterthought. There was plan A and plan B before Adam or Yahweh ever proposed plan C. It was all Adam all the time, plan A. I'm going to introduce him to every other life form, Bahama.
You choose,
As you choose, interact with them, talk with them, have fun with them, name them. That's going to be, that's plan B, and plan C was Java. So she may have been miffed. She may have said, okay, I know I was an afterthought, and I resent it. Possibility. It's possible that Chawa never bonded with Yahweh, such that they were as close as God had been to Adam. Though we're not told, perhaps even now, Adam may have been off exploring with Yahweh, as we were told they did regularly, leaving Chawa home alone, which would not have been healthy for her. I mean, she was given to Adam to keep Adam from ever having to be alone. But did Adam reciprocate? That could have been the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Adam may have enjoyed being enlightened by God more than his wife. If that's true, one day when Adam and Yahweh were out tending to the garden, Chawa may have been bored. It speaks to the value of work and of constantly learning and what is going to be productive and useful and enjoyable in the hereafter. Going out and doing stuff and exploring with Yahweh. And if you just sit back and you're bored, well, becomes the devil's playground. While it's an overgeneralization with countless exceptions, and this may have evolved over time where this is no longer true at all, if you go back in time throughout the ages, men have responded more to reason, and women have been more prone to express their feelings. You know, consider Chawa's Naga. Chawa may have had an independent streak, a desire to carve out a niche of her own. After all, Adam had enjoyed a relationship with Yahweh for mental stimulation and daily physical exertion while caring for the garden, as was his responsibility. And Chawa's role was to help Adam. In so doing, she may have engendered a loving and supportive response, which is the essence of an enjoyable and enduring relationship, but she may have done so because she felt, well, this is what God set me up to do, and therefore I'm obliged to doing so. And if that's the case, and it wasn't her choice, and if her contributions were not being reciprocated, where she was helping and giving, but Adam was not engaged in a supportive way, then she could have looked for a way out of that arrangement. When we interact under obligation rather than desire, we foreclose the joys of reciprocation, which make love so enchanting. Well, such is the case with a marriage vow. You know, I think that it would be fair to say that women value a marriage vow more than men do. And marriage vows are religious statements. Marriage vows are not godly precepts, even though they're all said, you know, before God, you make this vow that you shall love this person and cherish her and forsake all others for as long as you both shall live. God did not ask us to say something like that. And he doesn't really have very many good examples of somebody that's what they did.
No.
You know, and the people that he's closest to, well, they didn't even make an attempt.
No.
Dode, 8 wives, 10 concubines? No, I don't think
so.
So, God would not have made divorce so easy if he thought that we were somehow wired to find the right person such that we would be theirs alone throughout our entire mortal existence. Because his statement on divorce is, if you want a divorce, whatever the reason might be, write a letter and it says, I want a divorce. Explain why. That's it.
Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, because there is no reason to torture one another if the relationship's not working. You know, go find somebody with whom you are compatible, that you have some synergy with. So the marriage vows is a great example of people feeling compelled. I made a vow in front of God that I would do this forever, so I'm going to be miserable forever. That's not what God is asking for us or wants from us. But nonetheless, she may have resented that. Said another way, being kind, being affectionate, and uplifting will engender far more desirable responses than being commanding, controlling, and opposing based upon some kind of vow or construct. Had Chawa chosen to go out and explore the garden with Adam, her life would have been more adventurous and rewarding. The more each of them contributed to their to one another of their own volition, the more enjoyable and more stimulating the relationship would have been. And under those basis, Chawa would have been a lot less likely to have listened to the duplicitous devil. Anyway, and in reply, the adversary contradicted God, making a promise that he could not keep. And not only was he wrong, his counsel was deceptive and deadly. Chawa would die, just not instantaneously. She would become mortal, but body and soul would not fail concurrently. So this is what is comes next. It says, but the venomous serpent replied to the woman, you absolutely will not die. You absolutely will not die. It was partly true to a point. Chawa would not die on this day.
No.
And that was what made Satan's deception appear credible. Outright lies seldom fool anyone. But when the truth is twisted, when the counterfeit resembles the genuine article, it can be beguiling. After all, nobody wants to die. So it was very appealing to say, whoa, I can do it, and I'm not going to die. I've got this this guy's stamp of approval on it. Whoa, cool. Could have been nothing more than that. But, and really, what would Chawa know of lies?
Yeah.
He wouldn't know anything of death either.
Uh-uh. Yep. So it said, now, Yahweh actually stated, but from the tree of the awareness of knowledge of good and that which is beneficial, productive, and correct, and bad, that which is counterproductive, errant, improper, and disadvantageous, do not make a habit of continuing to eat. So here is, I should say, that the conclusion that God gave Adam is, as a consequence and result, in a day you will absolutely die, having been defined by having eaten from it. It was written in the call infinitive. The call infinitive is a verbal adjective. It says that, you know, you're literally going to be defined by having eaten from it. A call is the verb. So as a consequence and result, in the day you do so, you will absolutely die, having been defined by it. Now, it's never wise to remove something Yahweh said from context, particularly when it's a story of this importance. It's also foolish to truncate his instructions, both of which Satan did in this instance. But the single worst thing anyone can do is to contradict God while encouraging others to believe their misappropriation. Satan did this very thing with, "You absolutely will not die." Lo makes the second statement in the inverse effect. Now, no one wants to die, which is why Satan's depiction was enticing. It's the appeal of every religion, where the afterlife is promised to believers, but it's always a lie with a deadly consequence. People talk about hope and faith. These are being good things, but false hope is tragic, particularly when there is something that you can know that will provide a terrific result that is nullified by the faith, making the faith counterproductive. It robs people of the opportunity to capitalize on the truth. You know, when believers are manipulated, they're swindled in the exchange. Well, with lies the likes of this at the heart of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, it is both amazing and inexcusable that anyone is beguiled into believing them. That was the overwhelming conclusion. It's hard to write copy for questioning Paul, because Paul's statements are so stupid. They're so contradictory. They're so duplicitous. They're so blasphemous that all you want to do is puke. Vomit doesn't make for good commentary, but that's what we're up against. And people just aren't willing to recognize that if God said something and somebody is claiming the opposite of it, they're lying. And most of these lies...
Easy to understand.
Pardon?
I said it seems easy enough to understand.
Yeah.
It can't speak for God and contradict him.
Yeah, it's called that logic. What was interesting in Galatians is that Galatians reads like the first 30 or 40 surahs in the Quran chronologically, where Muhammad is constantly telling the Meccans, you know, you're idiots, you're stupid, you don't believe me, my God's going to get you. Repeat. You're idiots, you're stupid, my God's going to get you. That's just over and over and over again. Well, Paul's the same thing. He's saying, you're idiots, you're stupid, Galatians. You don't believe me, therefore my God's going to kill you. If you've got this book that's a broken record of Paul calling the entire community that he had preached to, he calls them traitors, he calls them irrational, he calls them ignorant. He says that you were liberated by me and my message of faith, but now you're enslaved again. If the general tone is to call everyone who has listened to you an idiot for not capitulating, then doesn't it say that those who knew him best rejected him, and those that don't know him at all are the only ones accepting him? And it's not just Galatians. Corinthians is the same thing. Thessalonians is the same thing. Paul is constantly lashing out at those people that listen to him preach. So you wonder why this very thin veneer of believability is engenders faith. You know, if a religion contradicts that which it derives its authority, it can't be true. It really is as simple as this. If Yahweh's word is true, religions like Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, which contradict the Torah, cannot be true. If Yahweh's word is not true, religions which claim they are divinely inspired and which garner their authority from the Torah, as Judaism, Christianity, and Islam do, are false. Now, while this simple logic renders all three religions invalid, something any informed and rational person will immediately recognize, these false dogmas prevail because very few people are informed and rational. That's the reason why this last debate process was so frustrating. So few people, so few, saying that able to distinguish between the candidates based upon what they had done, what they were likely to do. You know, it's as much as Trump was a nincompoop, virtually everything that he signed as an executive order was beneficial. And virtually everything that Biden has signed as an executive order to do away with it is counterproductive. Don't like either man. Didn't vote for either man. But the liberal is so emotionally charged with Trump. It really doesn't matter what their guy does to them. Anyway, Satan took his agenda one step further by enticing Chawa. She said, okay, because indeed the Almighty, he knows that truthfully, in the day that you eat from it, your eyes will be opened. You will exist like God, knowing good and bad. In psychological parlance, this is one of the most dangerous things that we encounter. It's called projecting. By using his tactics, Satan revealed that he is a psychopath and a narcissist. It was Satan who wanted to be like God, to be seen as above God. The adversary was revealing what he wanted and was doing so for all to behold. He said, because indeed the Almighty knows that truthfully, in the day that you eat from it, your eyes will be opened. Then you will exist like God, knowing good and bad. That's what Satan wants. He wants to be known as God. He wants to be seen as God. Of course, the truth is the opposite. And it's a terrible ploy, and he was wrong. And yet, as a psychopath and megalomaniac, Satan had no empathy and has an inherent disregard for humankind. So it's these failings that define his character and ambitions. With the adversary, the ends will always justify the means, no matter the carnage or suffering. In fact, the more carnage and suffering, the better. He has no regrets. The sacrifice of 10 billion souls, no consequence. He's fundamentally destructive. He has no remorse. I think Satan wants to have lots of company in hell. And the best way to do that is to encourage people to be religious. So, it's a very interesting dialogue that has happened thus far. You know, Satan is not only drawn to the best and the brightest among us, he can use such individuals to toss them aside if he cannot persuade them to join him, and he will seek to bring them down. The adversary is power hungry, is manipulative. You know, if he wants to be seen above the Most High, if you league with him, what is the chance that he won't steamroll you too? If he's going to step over God, he's sure as hell going to step over
the likes of, bus in a heartbeat.
Yeah, of Hadrian and Paul, Akiba, Hitler. Yeah, step right over them. So, they were fun for a while. You can go kill yourself now. You know, in this case, the adversary would deceive and then denigrate the woman to destroy the loving relationship that Yahweh had nurtured with man. He would strike back at God for by killing Adam. Chawa would be collateral damage. Disparaging women is a signature trait of narcissists. It is why Satan approached the woman rather than the man directly. Not surprisingly, Paul, Akiba, and Muhammad were all sociopaths. Everyone was a narcissist, as is the Lord of the Talmud, the New Testament's depiction of Jesus Christ in the Quranic Allah. The picture is clear and it's available for all us to see. With his words on this day, Satan revealed the means that he would deploy through Judaism, through Christianity and Islam, to dissolve and denigrate the Quran. The covenant would be denigrated by Paul, by Muhammad, by Akiba, by Paul. And it's a tactic that works for a good long while, just because most people aren't capable of figuring out what's going on. Now, if you want to hone your understanding of Satan and those who would advance his agenda, study psychopathy. There's a really good book on this subject that I would encourage. It's called The Wisdom of Psychopaths. It's written by a British psychologist, Kevin Dutton. You will discover, as was the case here with Satan's projecting his desires onto Chawa, that psychopaths and narcissists and their like, the psychopaths and borderlines, reveal their true nature and purpose with every word. You know, I know I was born of one and demeaned by another. Up to this point, all Chatham, Adam and Chawa, Yata, knew and they were aware of, recognized, experienced, acknowledged, and knew was Yahweh and the sheltered garden enclosure, the life that he had created therein. He had created for them everything that was tov, good, pleasing, enjoyable, beneficial. Until evil's advocates slithered into the garden, they had no knowledge whatsoever of anything bad, sad, immoral, harmful, disadvantageous, or distressing, even deadly. They had no concept of deceit. She was not capable of saying, "Oh, you're trying to deceive me." She would have known nothing of that. Eden was paradise, a place of great joy. It is also true that by eating the fruit, Chawa would add an awareness of evil and suffering to those pleasant things that she already knew. But since she had already experienced everything good, the implied benefit was worthless. Satan was adding a negative, diminishing the sum. He was adding a negative and thereby diminishing the sum. It is ironic that after attempting to increase her knowledge, Chawa only succeeded in degrading her experience. She decreased her life expectancy. And she was not alone. The Torah is diminished by the Talmud, the New Testament and Quran. Billions believe the opposite of what is true. Now, the moment we become aware of what is bad, evil, sad, distressing, harmful, counterproductive, we cease to be perfectly good. We are constantly confused with the choice between the two. Prior to such knowledge, neither Adam nor Chawa even contemplated the concept of deception or entertained the notion of being harmed or doing something that wasn't good for one another. It's hard to imagine living in that situation. And yet, to some degree, we are going to be in that situation going forward, because there will be a time where all we know is positive thoughts. We'll have no recollection of the pain, of the sorrow. So, in a way, we're going back to that. It must be a really good place to be. It's hard for us to even fathom it. Can you imagine being in a place where everything you know is positive, real, and good, genuine, nurturing, and uplifting?
Not really.
Me.
Yeah.
It's a place with only Judaizers.
You're here.
Oh, we are constantly confronted with the choice between good and bad. Prior to such knowledge, either Adam nor Chawa contemplated anything that would have been harmful to them. So, very few things are as destructive as an immature and irresponsible flirtation with that which is harmful. But we see that all the time. While we must eventually choose to avoid such things, we do not discuss murder, rape, arson, armed robbery, terrorism, incest, or pedophilia with a two-year-old, but may discuss kidnapping in terms that they might use to their advantage. All the rest, even if properly explained, would put frightened thoughts in a child's head and torture their youth, even foreclose the development of many relationships. It's stuff we need to know as adults that we don't necessarily need to know as children. The knowledge of evil precludes someone from living with the perfect God. It is why Yahweh no longer remembers our sins once we are forgiven. They are obliterated by light. It is why the new universe will be created, a perfect one, at the end of the millennial Shabbat, so that the in the realm of immortality, there is no benefit to knowing anything that is distressful. So let's create a new universe without a history that's painful. You know, Adam and Chawa were already like God. So this true was a half truth when he says, you know, you'll be like God. Well, they already were like God, and the whole promise of the covenant is to make us ever more like God.
Yeah, that's my thinking. Well, yeah. Why didn't they not know that? Why didn't they know that?
Right. You know, and plus, being like God right now is not such a good thing. We really have a happy. We have a happier existence than he is. He, to justifiably resolve our disputes, endured Passover as the Pesach lamb. That doesn't sound like fun.
Yes. No.
He was the one whose soul endured separation and Sheol on Matzah. That doesn't sound like fun.
No.
You know, he's the one that has to reconcile his relationship with people who are stubborn and pig-headed, and who have slandered him and besmirched him and spit in his face. That doesn't sound like fun. You know, imagine being God and hurting these stiff-necked cats out of Egypt and only to have them
create a golden calf at the end of it? I mean, what part of that's fun?
Being God is not a great gig right now. I think being God in eternity, as he only has family members around him and we're going off and exploring the universe and returning to just a bigger version of the Garden of Eden, well, that's cool again. That'd be fun. But right now, heck, I've said this before that I don't want Dode's job. I'm really glad that he has it. Who wants to be king? What a crappy job. Honey, shepherd too. What a crappy job. I wouldn't want those jobs. But, you know, Dode is cut out for it. He's raring to go. He's willing. I think that's marvelous. But it's just like, I wouldn't want to be God. I would. Can you imagine that responsibility? I wouldn't want to be Dode. I think it's much more enjoyable just to be one of the sheep. So what, you know, what Satan was offering to Jawa, I think could be a negative. But even if God gave you the go ahead and said, okay, JB, you're God, would you say, am I going to have fun now? Or would you say, good
grief? What did
grief.
I do? Why am I being punished?
Why am I being punished? Yes.
Good.
Wait, you want me to come up and write a Torah instruction that's going to endure the test of time, or can I just please read the ones that you've already written and try to make sense of?
Can I plagiarize yours?
Oh, God, I just want to, what if I just communicate yours? They're already good. I don't need anything. No, God, if Satan had said, you can be like God, I'd say, well, thank you, no.
Why?
Why?
Go fishing.
I'm not going to go fishing. I want to go play golf. So, and to a large degree, they were already like God, because what did God said? Let us produce Adam, man, in our image, after our likeness. You know, Teslim is in our image. Teslim would mean a two- or three-dimensional painted or sculptured representation of something larger. A shadow is a two-dimensional representation of a three-dimensional object. A Demuth, which is likeness versus image, is a comparison in the form of a picture. It is a builder's draft or a sketch, a blueprint, if you will, for a home. So we've got it written all over us. We're still in the better role. Now, if you had to be the choice, you could be the dad who has to go to work and make the sacrifices to support the family, or you can be the kid that gets to run around on his trike all day and play with his friends. Who's got the better deal?
Oh, I'd go back in a heartbeat.
Yeah, do you want to be the mom in the kitchen, or do you want to be the girl in the dollhouse, the swing set, the playset?
On a princess phone.
Yeah, on a princess phone.
I'm old.
Yeah. Or in today's world, to be the girl of the dragster. We as kids have a much better deal than our dad does or our mom does, and we as God's children have a much better life and deal than God does. You know, we get to spend time with him, and he has to spend time with us. I want to tell you. We've got a much better.
You're going to talk him out of this if you keep going.
Oh, yeah, really? I mean, just think of it. We get to spend time with him.
Yeah, hope he ain't listening.
Spend time with us. He's constantly lifting us up and prettying us up and perfecting us and enriching us. And what we're doing, what are we contributing? We make him giggle from time to time? You know, a smile? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'm expecting any moment now God to tap you, Kirk, on the shoulder and say, hey, you. He's right. Let's trade places.
No. No. JB is much more articulate. Go ahead, JB.
I'm good.
Yeah, JB.
I got enough responsibility with one kid. I don't need.
Yeah.
I can't
deal
with my dog.
Oh, God. Just think of all I went through to raise my sons. How much. All right, look at my dog. It's the she's got the best life going.
Yep.
You know? So, well, most incorrectly believe that this following statement is about having children. It's actually about closing the gap between our 3.5 dimensional realm and the Iowa 7, increasing our nature so as to become great as is God. This is one of the benefits of the covenant. It's why Yahweh got down on his knees to lift us up. Of course, if you want to be religious, then we as the faithful can take on the hard part and we can lift up God. Good luck with that. I
but
hope
we're
utilizers.
We don't do that sort of thing. Yeah,
yeah, you're weedy.
You
yes,
have fun trying to do that.
Yeah, you have fun. I don't think that's what Judaizers do, really. Yeah, Kirk, I think you got
them all. No, we don't do that.
Yeah. What we Judaizers do is we repeat God's really smart. We really like him, and he can keep his job because I don't
we
want
sound him. Really smart because of it. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
So God knelt down like next way. To them. This is after God says he created them, male and female. He created them in his image. He created them. God knelt down to them, saying to them, be fruitful and multiply. Oh, he's really saying become exceedingly great. Yeah, and then enlarge, reaching a very high point. So by twisting God's words, Satan played to our ego and his to jealousy by projecting his most debilitating flaws as the same failing which would have caused a once spiritual messenger to be thrown out and cast down, excluded from Shamaim. Now he wanted man to endure the same fate that had brought him down. Now, also worth noting, Satan doesn't just deceive Chawa. He actually did something far worse. He misconstrued God's nature and intent. According to the adversary, God did not want his creation to be enlightened. He was afraid of his creation being enriched and empowered. He was afraid that if he actually did what he said he was going to do in the covenant, that man was somehow going to override God and become God and demote God. I think God would be the first person to say, hey, if you can make that plan work, I'm for it. So, he, according to Satan, has no desire for men and women to learn because the inference was that God was like the Wizard of Oz. So, Chawa have pulled back the curtains. She would have seen an insecure little man and his puny little voice magnified, pulling the levers and using smoke and mirrors to maintain this illusion. One bite from the tree would be all it would take for Chawa to outwit it. Soon, she believed there would be 3, even 4 gods pulling the levers and eating. I tell you, woman, that was not the right call. Being God's kid is the best job of all. You know, I sometimes tell people, or I have people say, you know, you're really lucky you have this big, beautiful yacht or this fancy airplane. And I always said the same thing. Says, no, you got it all wrong. You're the one that's lucky. Being the friend of somebody that's got the big boat and the airplane is vastly better than being the one that actually owns these.
I like being a hanger-on.
That's what they were all missing here. You know, Yahweh had the garden. It's much better to be Yahweh's kid in that garden. To all of a sudden be responsible. Imagine what the taxes were. If that garden was in California, even God couldn't afford it. Then,
You smirched my state. My goodness.
Yeah. Sorry about
that. That's all right.
Yeah, well, you know, right now, that your state, it's either burning up or it's getting blanketed with snow. It's either under drought or right now you're under a total deluge. I don't get your state. It's
we can't figure out what we like.
Oh God, it's the land of extremes.
Gets over.
Yeah, it's the only state suffering from a drought that's flooded. But that's the way it goes. Or that's burnt down and awash in water. Then the woman looked. Well, yeah, the greatest thing about California, of course, is that the solution to COVID was more lockdowns. Well, until after everybody got to vote by absentee ballots, and then there was no reason for the lockdowns, so they let everybody loose, even though nothing had changed regarding COVID. Yeah, say what? Then the woman looked and saw that indeed. The tree was beautiful and pleasing, pretty, as a source for food to consume, and that indeed it was visually appealing and desirable, even eliciting cravings. So she coveted the tree to impart its insights, to inspire success and convey understanding. Therefore, she grasped a hold from the fruit. And she ate. And then she gave it to her man, who was in a relationship with her. And then he ate. Boy, there's not much of a transition from, and she coveted that fruit, and she grasped hold of it, and took a bite, and then she handed it over to her man. And then
that's
he
odd.
Ate. Yeah. Do you think Adam was there? Do you think that she, we're not told about the time interval. Time interval is meaningless with Yahweh.
No, he has to be not there for a while.
I never pictured Adam there when Satan is beguiling Chawa. I think it's a one-on-one thing. And then right at that time, that's when Adam showed up and she took the bite and said, here.
I've even considered that he might take her away. Yahweh may have taken him away so that opportunity would present itself.
Yeah, that gets to be God a little bit manipulative, so I'm not sure that's the that's not the case. Could well have been.
Well, he had to let him in, though. I mean, he had to know he was coming.
Yeah. Our favorite young lady on this island, she's kind of our island grandchild. We have an island grandson and an island granddaughter. And she was in school the day before yesterday where the teacher said that every one of your footsteps is destined by God. So that kind of reminds me a little bit of that, that God made this happen to Chawa by pulling Adam away and making her susceptible to it. Can you imagine a God that is so myopic that he's playing like we're puppets on a string, and everything that happens to us in our lives, he has orchestrated?
That's fair.
And he's doing it with everybody else.
We walk our own path for our own reasons.
Yeah, it means that he has to be doing it with the rapists and the jihadists and the terrorists and the arsonists.
I get it.
Yeah,
good point. Good point.
Wow. Yeah, so I know. I just don't think that God is manipulative in that way. So she gave it to the man. The man ate as well. Chawa made a conscious decision. That's clear. I mean, she did think it through, but not a conscientious decision. She looked. Liked what she saw, was enticed by the possibilities. She seized on the opportunity. She didn't know fact-checking. She didn't bother to compare Satan's ruse with the truth. She didn't turn to Yahweh and ask for clarification on his guidance, which she could have done. She didn't discuss this with Adam. She had all of those options. She could have discussed it with Adam. You know, they're in a relationship here. this is a life-changing moment. If you have any respect for him, you're going to say, hey, let's talk about this. I know this fellow waltzed in here and made this proposal, checked it out. I think it's looking good. We should do this. She didn't do that, though. So she's clearly had no respect for her husband. She could have said, you know, you make an interesting case, but, you know, he's pretty cool. I think I'm going to wait until he and Adam get back to him, whatever they're going to do, and I'll ask him personally. And I'll get a clarification on this. She didn't do that either. So she didn't have any respect for Yahweh. Interesting realizations we don't like to think about, but by doing this and not discussing it with anyone, she clearly is showing it. She's disrespecting them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Reliant on bad information.
Make a good rabbi.
Yes, she would. Or a really good priest. Reliant on bad information, she made a poor choice. A superficial one at that. The fruit appeared good to eat, looked pretty, was visually appealing. Yeah, that was enough. Imagine that. She forfeited living with God in the garden based on pretense and opinion. But isn't that what every religious person has done throughout history?
Mm-hmm.
The faithful, they never compare their religious claims to God's testimony. If you were to compare what Paul said to God's testimony, you'd rip up Paul's letters and the Christian New Testament that he influenced and throw it away and apologize and say, I'm embarrassed that I ever believed this. Where are the Judaizers when you need them? No, the faithful never make those complaints or those comparisons.
No.
It's their beliefs are predicated on lies. Now, addressing his relationship with Jawa, the text states that Adam, in a relationship with her, which is to say that he was associated with her, and in this decision, and thus considered similar to her, him does not infer that Adam was standing next to Jawa this whole time. It doesn't indicate that he had been a party to the exchange with Satan. It just means that they were of one accord, one ultimate fate, necessitating a consistent consequence for similar choices. Like Judaism, Pauline Christianity, or Islam, there would not be a double standard with a woman being blamed for man's mistake, even though that was Adam's go-to moment. She ate it. That woman you gave me, it's your fault and her fault, not my fault. But God didn't roll that way. Lacking any information to the contrary, the implication is that Adam lacked the good sense, the character, to challenge the majority opinion. If so, he represents most people today. He went with the flow. He had his wife. He had had Satan. They outvoted him 2-1. That was the majority. The majority can't be all that wrong. He just went along.
Cade.
Yeah. It was way too loving. Had Adam countered the adversary's enticing solicitation just by correctly citing Yahweh's instructions, all would have remained good. Had he encountered Jawa and encouraged her to sit down or set down that fruit, you don't want to do this because this is what God said, that this would be the consequence, then they would still be living in Eden.
That's brilliant insight, you know. I've never heard that before. That's really, that's exactly all he had to do.
Right. Just take a moment.
Stop it now.
Set it down. In fact, Jawa, I tell you what, Jawa, you know, maybe I did get it wrong. Maybe I didn't do a good job explaining this to you. But let's just take a moment. Chill. is take a moment. This is a, it's the only thing God told us that, that there'd be a negative consequence if we do this thing. So let's just take a moment. God's, we'll explain this to, we will hold up this, this thing. We'll say, this is what the serpent said. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to us. This fruit looks really, really appealing, though. Before we do this thing, can you tell us again why this is not necessarily in our interest? And tell us, you know, did he tell us the truth or did he lie to us? It would just have taken a moment. You know, if you're confused, something comes into your life, and well, like the person that accused me of being a Judaizer, if rather than do that and preclude himself from knowing the truth, what if he had taken the same amount of time to read the Torah, to read about what the very passage that you read, Kirk, that talks about the yeah. eternal restoration of the soul, that God yeah. encouraged us of our own volition to walk to him so he could perfect us. Why not give God the opportunity? He's God after all. Give him the opportunity and they would have still been there. It's a benefit we could all share because Yahweh conveys the instructions such as this one to us in such a way that it's written in the imperfect. So even if she had grabbed the fruit, even if she had taken a bite of the fruit and Adam said, hey,
imperfect.
That's enough. If you stop now, we're going to be okay. But let's stop for a moment, take a breath, and let's give God the opportunity to explain to us why this may not have been a good choice. Now, while Adam would ultimately have his relationship with Yahweh reconciled, and likely because he stopped doing the thing that God said was going to cause you to die. Because once you set down the fruit, you're no longer guilty of having eaten it. All you have to do is stop. That's the advantage of something written in the imperfect.
You're here.
Yeah. So it's one thing to encourage others to reject God and yet another to respond to them. Those who promote mischaracterizations of Yahweh are going to be held accountable for robbing of others of their souls. And as a result, Sheol is going to be a very popular place, more popular than Shemaim. So what we're going to find here as we move into next week is that God is not omniscient. He's not omnipresent. We're going to find out what actually transpired with the eating of fruit. And the most amazing thing is we're going to go through what everyone thinks is a penalty and to see that, that no, there really aren't penalties. They're all good things. And then this transitions into something that is really surprising about Chawa and the naming of her sons and the behavior of the sons. It's an amazing story. And we're just going to, every time God says something, we're going to contemplate, why is this so? What can we learn from this? Is there an insight we can derive that's helpful to our lives? So, probably a good place for us to stop. I'll pick this up next week. JB, I did notice that we, when I tried to sign on to Yadia Radio, that the switchboard took me doing a lot of manipulations to bring up. I don't know if there's a new interface or what's going on there, but oh my, it took me 20 minutes to get the switchboard up and the chat room open. So there may be something going on with Blog Talk Radio that I'm unaware of.
Okay. I didn't notice anything when I brought it up. It came up pretty quick, so
okay.
Maybe it was something at the time. Hopefully we'll take it out later to make sure tomorrow, see how it looks.
Yeah. Normally you click on that far right tab, and it brings down the studio, but there was no studio link, and no matter how many times I refreshed the page, what I did, it wouldn't go up. I actually logged out and then logged back in and went to various places on the Blog Talk Radio site, and ultimately it did bring it up, but I was pretty concerned there for a while. So I'd love to know what's going on. All right, guys. Yeah, you guys have a wonderful evening. Best to you and your family.
You too.
Happy
Shalom.
Shalom.
Talk to you next week.
Good night.
Shalom. Shalom, y'all. Bye, JB.
Good night.